All right. Welcome to the Avery Adventures Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Avery.
I'm Tanya Avery.
Coming from somewhere in southern Idaho from Robbie's Hunting Shack.
That's right. Deer Camp 2018.
So far, Deer Camp 2018 hasn't panned out, but we have 2 days left.
Just like they said in True Grit, that didn't pan out too well.
No, we've seen bucks. It just seems like it's a little slow.
It's slow. We lost a lot of bucks 2 years ago. I know I've been saying that, but every time I go out and hunt anywhere in southeast Idaho, I'm reminded we are short on bucks.
Seen a lot of does.
A lot of does, and there are some good bucks around. I know there are, but just not a lot of them.
Just not a lot of them. We've covered some country, too. It's not like we've just been glassing from the truck with Tanya's picture of me falling asleep with the spotter.
Yeah, that was kind of not real. I know that you've been out there hiking. I followed your tracks up that ridge tonight. You guys been all over back there.
Yeah, so hopefully tomorrow it all comes together for both Justin and Tanya.
I hope so. I think it's a good day tomorrow.
Justin, how many bucks have you seen?
Ooh, man. I bet Robbie and I have seen 5-6 deer. Yeah. 5-6 bucks, I mean.
Yeah, if we're not counting little 2 points of stuff that you don't really look at. So,
yeah.
Probably 5 or 6, somewhere in there.
Yeah, and me and Tanya have seen 2, but one was a shooter. He just didn't hang around long enough to get shot. He's just a big 3.
Yeah, yeah. And that Justin, that one Justin I saw yesterday, he was about 3 miles away. So you got to kind of fill in the gaps a little bit when you're looking at him that far. But he was probably a, 160, 170 buck. He might even been a little bit better if we'd have got over there. Usually if you can see him from that far away, you're usually not disappointed when you get over there. But he got down in the heavy cover. He wasn't, I knew we wouldn't be able to get on him. And then we went back today and came right in there, and we never did see him in there.
Comparing that, just to touch on your long-range glassing thing, how did you know the difference between like that kind of a buck and the buck that you shot in 2016 that you saw from how far away?
God, it was about the same distance. It was about 3 miles. And in 2016, that buck skylined itself.
Uh-huh.
And the sun was behind my back, so I got a way better look at him. And this buck yesterday, I mean, we're looking in gray conditions, low clouds, spitting a little bit of snow.
Mm-hmm. Robbie Denning, you just joined our live cast.
Yeah, it popped up. It said rock slide, so I pushed it.
Way to go, Robbie. Way to go.
Man, you're Robbie. I never thought you were quite that multitasker.
Robbie, nice.
I did.
Biceps.
I did FaceTime him from the bathroom today.
Yes, Ryan FaceTimed me, not just from the bathroom, but from the pot itself.
Yes, I was taking a
his business. So anyways, Ryan, answer your question. That buck in 2016, well, we haven't seen this other buck close enough yet, but pretty sure it was a bigger buck, but I just got a lot better look at it. That buck yesterday, it was hard to really see, wasn't it, Justin?
It was, yeah. I mean, we were looking at it in spotters.
Yeah.
And it had to be just right with the background, or you almost couldn't even see his antlers.
Yeah, exactly. You couldn't tell him from the does until he'd walk out into a little patch of snow or something. It was like, oh, he's a good basket buck. And so sometimes when you're looking at him that far, that's what I mean when I said you kind of got to fill in the gaps. Like, okay, looks pretty high. I think he's about to his ears. What you're not seeing it that far is brow tines, cheaters. Unless they skyline themselves, it's hard to tell their mass. You know, that's what I mean. He was no giant buck. We'd have gone after him if he was. But, you know, he's definitely the nicest one we've seen, which is a little sad with the conditions we've got. You know, it's cold and snow.
There's snow every day.
Yep, snow every day. But all is not lost. They could still be out there.
Do you look anything at, like, posture-wise when you're looking at bucks that far away or no?
Yeah. A lot of times, if they're with the does, because it's November, 6th right now? So, you know, they're with does. I just look at their body size compared to the bucks. And Justin, you noticed this morning that buck did not look a lot different in body size.
He looked like the does.
This is a different buck. And, you know, he was probably a 2-3-year-old buck. Where that buck yesterday was, you know, a notch bigger than the does. He wasn't huge, but, you know, he was a good body. So, yeah, I look at that stuff as far as, you know, just posture. Just you could just tell he was rutting. You know, he'd lay his head down low and he was sniffing the ground a lot. That's one thing I've noticed about this time of year. They're like dogs. They smell the ground a lot.
Right. I didn't notice what you were saying about, like I said, I'm not a mule deer hunter. I'm an elk hunter.
You are now.
I'm a quasi mule deer hunter because I'm under the legend's tutelage.
Imagine. I knew we couldn't make it 10 minutes into the podcast without that.
I'd appreciate everybody listening to the podcast or watching it live. When you refer to Mr. Denning, you call him hashtag the legend.
No, please don't. In the wrong hands, that's going to be used against me.
I forgot what we're talking about. Right, I lost me on the legend.
See what happens when we get all befuddled when you bring that up. But back to that buck we saw yesterday. We had the Swaro 15s out there, and then Justin had his Swaro
20 to 60 by 80,
and I had my 25 to 50 to 80, basically same scopes with different eyepieces, and both of us could see that buck, you know, really well considering the conditions. Gotcha. And I don't think you could have done that with lesser glass at that far.
Gotcha. No, I agree. And another thing about the we were talking about it tonight was those SIGs 15s Justin was using.
Yeah, I was really impressed with using those tonight. I mean, haven't used 15s a lot, but and I was picking out deer at 1,700 yards, and like you were looking at them right in front of you.
What's the name of those again, Jeff?
That's the Sig Sauer Zulu 9 15 by 56. We just put that review up on Rockslide this week, and I tested them against the Swaros, the same Swaros I was talking about yesterday. And they're 85-90% Swaro. They're really good. They're the best 15s I have looked through besides Swaros. I never did get to look through the Mavens that Jordan did.
Gotcha.
But there's a lot of value in them. There really is. And that's why they're on this hunt too. I just happened not to be using them yesterday.
I just used them for about an hour. And one thing that jumped out at me, it has really, really nice eye relief and it's super crisp.
Yep. Very crisp. I was surprised. And I didn't mention it in the review because I didn't think about it until Justin said this today, but they do have a great depth of field. And that's something that can kind of be lacking in some of the 15s, those Vortex Vultures I used for a year. You know, they were pretty good glass for $500 bucks, but that was one thing, was the depth of field. You were constantly having to adjust your focus. Where the SIGs, like you said tonight, Justin,
150 to 1,800 yards, I never changed.
You don't have to touch them, but 15s are awesome.
They're beautiful for looking at flat tops. What, 1,700 yards? You said.
Yep.
Tomorrow we got to bust out the legend. He's gonna have to find us some big ones.
Yeah, I don't know. We've been hunting some good country. Like Robbie said, the weather's been great, but just the big bucks aren't showing up yet.
Yeah, they're around. They're just not as many as there was a couple of years ago.
All right, let's get the meat of our podcast. We're going to go through Robbie's, not me, not Tanya and Justin's hunt, but his 2018 kind of go through your whole season, your archery season into your rifle season, and kind of tell us how it went down.
Okay. Yeah, I'm tagless now. I'm just along here for the ride. So this year, I've got a lot of points in different states, and I threw into some pretty good hunts, some really good hunts, just figured I wouldn't draw them, and I didn't. And I just fell back on Idaho, and in Idaho, most people know you can get your a second tag if you buy it early enough, if the non-resident quota isn't met. So I decided I'm just going to focus on Idaho this year. I'm not going to travel anywhere, and started in late June in some lower country that I know, and it's a easy unit to draw. It really is. And I put in for that for the controlled hunt. Didn't go for, you know, any late buck hunts or anything like that. I've seen some good bucks in that unit during archery season, and so I put in for it. So I had the rifle tag too. And started in late June. It's trail camera country. There's limited water there. And got my trail cameras out. And I started scouting the higher country. Usually you can't even get into it till mid-July. And a lot of times the bucks aren't even up there until late July. And so I was running that trail camera that we did the review on a couple of years ago, the GXW. And it's the wireless one. So once I put that camera in, and I had some other cameras in the same area, but I knew that camera would send me images every day. And, you know, if something good showed up or a lot of bucks started to show up, I knew I could, you know, go down there and glass and check those other cameras. Well, it just really never took off there this year. And I don't know, it's always different. You know, there was not a bunch of winter kill there. I really thought I would see better bucks there. And by late July, usually you've seen a couple of nice bucks on the T-cams by then. Just nothing was really showing up. And by then I could get into the high country. So I made a horseback trip for 4 days and just check some of the places that I've hunted before. And I found a shooter buck Although at the time I was thinking he's probably just going to be lower on the hit list, but he was a good buck. He was probably in his probably mid-180s then, and he had a big cheater up on top. So he was a straight typical, good tall buck, and then a literally about a 4-inch cheater up on the top.
Mm.
And that's what put him about 185. But I really was hoping for better, but you know, watched him for a day or two, kind of figured out how he was using the mountain. He was with about a 27-inch buck. And I don't usually just go back and check on bucks. I just kind of find them, leave them alone, move on to the next one, look for a bigger one. And I was really hoping for this low country stuff to produce. And like I said, nothing was showing up on the trail cameras of any size. But I thought, you know, trail cameras don't see everything. I'm just going to get over there and make sure I do my own due diligence and, you know, glass it at daylight, just take a look at everything. There's about probably 6 or 7 square miles of country right there, and I've got about 3 spots in it where I've seen good bucks. So between about the first week of August and the third week of August, I made a couple of trips in there. Checked those other trail cameras, same thing, wasn't much on those. The digital one was still sending me pictures. And when I went to check the digital one, it's down on a little spring on the side of a big ridge. And as I was going in there, above the trail camera, about 500 yards, was a good buck, just maybe 15 minutes after sunrise. And I didn't have a real good angle on him, and he was walking left to right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see him from the side. You know, that's always kind of tough to judge him. I've learned that if they look big from the side, they usually are big.
Mm-hmm.
And as he went around the hill, you know, I could see into the back of his antlers, and that will always goof you up because they always look good from the back. But I could tell he was a really good buck. You know, we're talking mid-180s to even low 190s. No time to get a phone scope on him or anything. You know, this is just like, oh, gosh, there's a big buck, and just sat down and just looked. And he got around the hill, and then I was really excited, thinking, man, maybe he's on the trail camera. And that was that digital camera.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting pictures from it at like 7 in the morning, and it was already past that. And so I went through those pictures, and he wasn't on it. And so I just left the camera alone, didn't go up there, and I had to leave that day. So I just thought, okay, he's there. I know he's there. He's probably going to show up on that camera. That was about, must have been 10th of August, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I checked those other spots. I didn't see any deer in those, and was pretty much planning on hunting that buck. And I just kept thinking he would show up on that trail camera and I'd get a really good look at him. But I had pretty much decided he was bigger than the high country buck. But as we got closer to archery season, which is August 30th, I think I went down there like 3 times in 10 days trying to get glass on him. And I besides not seeing him, what I was noticing, I'm not seeing hardly any other bucks. You know, there's usually a couple, you know, 24 to 28 inch bucks running around up there, you know, kind of second choice bucks. And it was just a weird year. And so as we got closer to the 30th, I just had a gut feeling that if I am not finding this buck when nobody's up there, nobody's messing around, it's not going to get any better in archery because there are some guys that hunt there. It's not very hard to get into. It's, you know, it's not horse country. You can just walk right in there. And I changed my mind about 5 days before the season opened, and I decided, you know what, that high country buck, that was like the 28th of July that I saw him. He was a good buck then. I'll bet he's even better now. And that spot hardly gets any archery pressure. So I thought, I'm just going to go after him. And bagged the low country buck, left the camera out, just left it down there, and thought, you know what, archery season's 30 days long. I'll go after him if he shows up on there. So I packed into the high country the 29th of August, and it opened the 30th, and stayed out of that basin, got up there that night, didn't go in the basin, just waited until open morning, got up on top. It took about 5 minutes to find him. Wow. And man, he had polished off, now he was still in velvet, but I mean, he had finished off way better than what I thought he was. He was well over 190 if you counted that cheater. And, you know, this is 190 gross. I mean, he probably was not a book buck. I mean, he definitely wasn't because of that cheater. But, you know, just a good looking deer. He wasn't that wide. He probably, with that cheater might have got him to 30, 31. You know, he was probably like a 27-inch buck on his frame. But I've got a picture of him in the phone here, Ryan. When we get done, I'll show him to you that I took it through the spotting scope. And I didn't have my phone scope because I don't pack it when I'm hunting.
I think you sent it to me.
Did I send it to you?
Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, he's just a good-looking buck. So I saw him opening morning, and I thought, oh, man, this is awesome. And he was within 300 yards of where I'd seen him in the summer. And he was with a new buck, and I don't think I sent you the picture of that one. And the new buck was only about 23 or 24 inches wide, but he was like that buck I killed here. He was so heavy at the top, you know, and they're in velvet then, so it makes him look even better. But you could just tell that, you know, he just got real clubby at the top. So it was pretty neat watching those two bucks, and I'm like, I'm glad I came up here. I didn't see any other bow hunters that day. Usually if they're not in their opening morning, you don't see them. But these bucks were living out on a big open slope, and there was, you know, little various timber patches that they would bed in, and then one big expanse of timber at the kind of the far north end of the basin that they would head into. So I watched them that morning, and there was no chance for a stalk on them. They just stayed out in just basically too open a country. And I stayed up there till roughly, an hour before dark. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to stalk them tonight. Got off the mountain, got back down to camp. I'm camped about a mile from them and maybe 1,000 feet below them. And, got back up there the next morning, got in the same place. And they had moved down the basin to where there's some timbered benches. And it was a little better stalking opportunity. In fact, he laid in the same bed that I videoed him in July. So I knew where the bed was. I kind of knew how to get in there. I didn't give him a long time. Sometimes I'll wait till 11 to stalk him, but you know, it's an east facing slope. So the sun was already on it. We had updrafts and everything. And there was one problem with the place. There was about 3 dry does in there. And when I say dry does, they just didn't have fawns. I don't know if they lost them or whatever. And so, you know, they're out there running all over the place. You know how does are. I mean, you know, they bust you during the rut. It's the same during archery season. And it's kind of weird in the high country to see 3 dry does in running with bucks. But so I had to, you know, wait for them to get out of the way and everything. And I think I started my stalk. I had to stalk across. And so I took off after him. And, well, we lost Tanya there.
I'm trying to read this, and apparently I keep doing it on your crotch.
There's something on my crotch?
No, you keep...
Oh, I see. Jeez, Tanya, that's embarrassing.
So Matt says crotch shot.
Matt Cashel?
And he wanted to know if you parked your dragon outside.
I don't even know what that means.
You're badass. You ride a dragon. You're the legend.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's good, Matt.
That's good, Matt. That's like the almost as good as the back of a hippo's throat, Matt.
Which Matt is this?
Casual. So that I had to put an eggplant.
Can we block him?
Well, we can, but I'm not gonna. He's
it hilarious. Makes me nervous to know he's even out there watching this.
I interrupted you. I want to ask you a question because I hear all these other people and their philosophy on when to go after a bedded buck with your bow. Do you have a general philosophy? Do you wait for its second bed? Do you wait for, you know, hear the shade, the sun?
Good question. First of all, I'm not a very good bow hunter. So, I've only killed 3 good bucks with my bow, and that's over like 20 years. So, you know, I go many years without getting one. So I've tried first bed and second bed. It's always better if they're in their second bed because they're not going to move as much. But as this story will show, sometimes their second bed, by the time you let them move into it, if they get into the thick stuff, you don't know where it is. And if they're with other bucks, you can't just go still hunting in there and get them. And that's what happened on this buck. So with this buck, it was his first bed. That's why I was stalking him pretty early. And I think he laid down at like 8:45 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I started stalking him about 9:30. But the reason I did is because he laid in that same bed that I told you I saw him in where July was. And those does had got down below him. And I, you know, they'd been running all over that slope. And I thought, I should stalk him now while I know where he's at. All the other deer are below him. He was with a couple other bucks too that had gone. When I say below him, they were like 50 yards to 100 yards below him. I just saw him disappear into the cover. So I went after him in his first bed because he was the top deer on the hill. Okay. But I don't really have a formula on it either. I mean, I think that sometimes it's wise to stalk him in the second bed, but what ended up happening is I got around the slope and I took it slow and it was getting to be about 11. So I'd probably been stalking him about an hour and a half, and I could see the tops of his antlers, and he was about 75 yards, you know, and I'd move a step and, you know, wait a while and move a step. So, you know, I'd been ranging him since I'd been like at 110 yards mm-hmm. from him. At least the tree was bedded under. But as I got to about 75 yards, I could start to see the tips of his antlers, and he was still laying down. He was looking to my right, and I thought, man, this might work out. You know, I need to get, you know, 60 yards or so. I only, some, you know, I'm only 10 yards or so from being in the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're trying to manage your eyes between looking at the deer, looking for other deer, looking at where you're stepping, you know, so I'm kind of going back and forth. And mm-hmm. I looked up and I couldn't see it. I couldn't see him laying there anymore. I mean, I was close enough. I could see him with my naked eye, and I couldn't mm-hmm. see the tops of his antlers. I'm like, okay, is he blending in? And about 2 feet to the left. Well, 2 yards to the left, I see his antler, and I can tell he has stood up, and by the way the antler is turned, I can tell he's facing me mm-hmm. now, and he's turned around and turned and headed down the hill, but he's looking up at me. I thought, oh crap, he got up, and I didn't see him get up. And so I got ready. I had my release on my D-loop, but there was no shot. He had, you know, big branch in front of him. I couldn't even see his whole body. And I thought, well, the gig's probably up on this one. I'm just going to just hope when he steps out, he stops. And this probably was only like 5 seconds. The next I saw him was he just took a step, turned, and walked down the hill, and I saw him walking away. But by his body language, he didn't look spooked at all. He didn't. What I thought happened was he just got up out of his bed. And I happened to be looking down at the ground because I was going to take a step, and I didn't see him get up. Mm-hmm. And when he got out of his bed, all he got to do is take one step. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a couple of yards for him, and he was behind that other tree. And I did not perceive that he saw me. Mm-hmm. But when I saw him walking down, he went off the crest of the hill right into those other deer is where he went. So I sat on my butt there for half an hour trying to decide what to do, and I saw a couple other deer get up down there and move into that same timber patch. And, you know, this is a patch that's the size of, I don't know, it's big. You know, it's 50 yards wide, 100 yards long going down in the bottom. Mm-hmm. So I finally opted to just back out of there because I thought I'm not going to be able to stalk in there. I don't know exactly where he went, and there's other deer. So I backed out of there, had to hike back up that nasty slope, got up on the ridge where I'd spotted him that morning, and I glassed that timber for 2 or 3 hours, and I could not see him down in there. It was just the wrong angle. And so I hung out that afternoon and kept glassing, never saw him get up. And about 6 o'clock, as the shade hit that side of the mountain, he appeared clear up on the slope, and I think he'd worked his way around from some timber and mm-hmm. got up there without me seeing him. And he was with that other 27-inch buck. I couldn't see any other deer out there. And he was just out there feeding. And, you know, this is, I don't know, it gets dark at 8 o'clock, 8:30, something like that, a couple hours before dark. But I thought, you know, no chance for a stalk. He's up on the most open part of the slope. But it confirmed me that he wasn't spooked. I thought, man, I didn't spook him. This is great. I'm glad I backed out of there. I mean, part of me thought, man, if I'd have sat there all day, he might have fed into me. But by the time the shadows hit that a mountain, the downdrafts are going down, I would have been above him. So I just pulled out. I actually got back to camp a little bit early. I didn't even watch him till dark, so I thought he'd be back out there in the morning. So fast forward 8 days. I never saw him again.
Wow.
I don't know what happened. I still don't think he saw me. But I stayed there for 8 more days, and after 3 more days of not seeing him and still seeing that other number 2 buck that was out there, mm-hmm. the big clubby one, I started hunting him because I thought, you know, this other buck, I don't know where he went. There's a couple other little side basins there. I checked those, didn't see him in them. So I started hunting that number 2 buck, and the first day I hunted that number 2 buck, I got within 60 yards of him, which was striking distance. And back to the first bed, second bed. Mm-hmm. He laid in his first bed, and I could just tell by the vegetation. It was like chest-high vegetation. I'd been down in that country before. There's no walking through it without making noise. Mm-hmm. You can't crawl through it. You know, it's just too thick. And he had bedded under on a little shelf underneath a spruce below all that vegetation. So I thought, I'm just going to sit up where I can see him and see what he does when he gets up. And he got up at I don't know when they usually do, 11, 12, something like that. And he scooted around to the north end of the basin where I told you at the beginning of the story all that heavy timber was. But when I say heavy timber, it's strips of timber. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's a strip of timber that's 50 yards wide and goes from the top of the mountain clear down into the bottom. And I saw him feed around the mountain into those. So I took off after him, you know, and I'm an hour from him from where I'm watching. So by the time I got down in there, it was probably 1 o'clock. And at that time of year, they're typically up for 15 to 30 minutes, and then they lay back down for a couple hours. So I thought, by the time I get back around here, he's probably going to be bedded, but I better move pretty slow in case he gets up. And that was the mode I was in. As I come around to the last place that I had seen him where he disappeared into the timber, I just kind of stood up on my tippy toes because there was a little line of brush in front of me, more like stunted alpine spruce is what it was, where the snow slides down and kind of crushes it, but then it tries to grow back up again. Mm-hmm. And I peeked up over it. Man, he was standing down there, and it was 63 yards, and he was feeding, and he had his head down in the deep grass. He couldn't see me. I thought, oh, man, he's up already. And I lost my head just a little bit and didn't think it through. That I am so close, he can hear me. I should have been more careful. But all I had to do was take about 2 steps kind of left diagonal, and I could see over that stunted spruce. And I had ranged him at 63 yards. I thought, man, I take 2 steps left here, he's going to be at 61, and I can kill him. And like it always is, you have to look down. You can't just take a step, or you'll step on a stick or something. So I looked down, I kind of made that shuffle to the left, and I went a little fast. And just as I set my foot down and then went to look back up, I heard a thump. And I don't know if you've been close to deer before when they're in their beds. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes you'll just hear them like thump a leg on the ground or something. That's what it sounded like.
Right.
And I'm like, what was that? But I didn't hear anything else. And I thought, okay, he's got to be right here. I got the glass up, got looking back down in there, gone. And it's a wide enough open slope. He had to go like 5 or 10 yards to get out of my sight. My heart just sunk. I thought, oh, frick, I moved too fast, and he heard me. And I think that's exactly what happened. So that was like 2 o'clock, but you don't know they ran off, so you just got to keep hunting them. I stayed down there till dark and just kind of pussyfooting around that ridge, you know, glassing down in the timber. Never did see him. So hunted him a couple more days, saw him one more time. Didn't give me a stalk, got into some pretty heavy timber. And then I think it was like the 7th or 8th day, he went back almost on the same path where I had spooked him. And I got back down in there and didn't know where his second bed was. I saw him bed once on the open slope, and then he moved in there. And I spent literally from about 10:30, 11 in the morning just pussyfooting down through that timber, just glassing it and seeing if I could either see him get up or if he was laying under one of those spruce. And about 1 o'clock, I spotted a deer's head between 2 spruce down there in the shadows. And I literally fiddled around for 2 hours trying to identify if it was him. I mean, and I'm looking through a slot between 2 trees, and I think if I remember, I was about 150 yards. And finally, that deer got up, and it was a doe.
Oh man!
Wasted all that freaking time on a doe, and it got up, man. And it did just what you expect deer to do that time of year. They just came out, fed about 15 minutes, and then she went back in the trees. And I thought, well, that was kind of the direction he was headed. She's all calm. You know, I know there's nothing up here where I'm at. You know, I'm already committed for the day. It's getting to be 2 or 3 o'clock. So I thought, I'll just work my way down there through the afternoon and just keep doing what I'm doing. And it almost worked. At 6 o'clock, I see the tips of some antlers down there at about 200 yards going back in the timber. And I had to pussyfoot forward just a little bit and look over a rise. And he had gone way further down the mountain than what I had thought. And again, this is the whole thing about first bed, second bed. Like, I waited for him to get in his second bed, and then I didn't get to see really where it was. And his second bed ended up, you know, 300 yards further down the mountain than what I thought. That buck moved a lot. And I think that was about 5:30 or 6 o'clock when I saw him up. And it was kind of disheartening because he had gotten up and actually came out and fed, and I had not seen him. There was just enough curve in the hill that I couldn't see him, and I must have moved enough steps in that, you know, 15 minutes or so that he was feeding, that I finally got where I could see over the top of the rise. And by then he was headed back in the timber. So I thought, well, I know where he's at, and he's probably going to come out at dark. So I pussyfooted all the way down there, and no, I'm in not socks, but like little light. They're like a slipper, but they're like rubber bottomed, and not very comfortable on a 40-degree slope at all. But I got down there and set up about 70 yards from where I saw him go into the timber, and I don't know, I might have set maybe a half an hour or so. And I didn't really know what I was going to do other than I hope he feeds out, or maybe I'll see him and I can make a final play on him. And either the doe I had seen earlier or another doe. Remember I told you these dry does. All of a sudden I heard a deer blow. And I'm like, what the heck? I haven't even moved. I've got the wind. What's going on? And here comes that doe prancing out, looking around. And for a second I thought, oh, this is going to play right into my hand. They're coming out. Well, she bounded down the hill, so obviously she was spooked. Long story short, I sat till dark. Never saw him. And so I think I was down in there from like 10 o'clock in the morning until, you know, 7 at night. I mean, it was a long old day in there.
Wow.
But I must have buggered him up. He must, you know, when I don't know if she's... I thought I had the wind, but you know how wind can swirl on those shaded slopes, and maybe she caught it, but I think I had two more days and I never saw him again either. So I pretty much cleared that basin out of those bucks. And, that was, I think I hunted till what, the 8th of September. And, then I packed out. It's 14 miles in there. So you don't just go revisit it in a couple of days, you know?
No.
Yeah, it's a long old horseback ride in there. So I got out and, you know, got back to work, got healed up from that. Ryan had a big long to-do list for me and for Rock Slide, got that all caught up. And now it's getting to be like the 15th, 18th of September, and I'm debating like, okay, do I do the 14 miles back in there? And the more I thought about that low country buck, I thought, you know, I should at least go hunt him. Typically, the archery pressure in there is only the first couple of days. And by the way, that trail camera quit sending me images on like the 12th or something like that. And I thought, okay, maybe the batteries died. I mean, it had been down there since the end of June. I thought, well, I need to go pull the trail camera and I'll go in there and hunt that buck. So I went down there and actually took the horses with me, even though you don't really have to pack in there, just so I could have enough gear to stay on the mountain and then cover some country. So I packed in there on like a Thursday night and I stayed till Sunday. Found out the trail camera got stolen. It was gone. But there was no other hunters in there, but that was what, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 more days of glass and I never turned up that buck. So now we're getting down to the very end of archery season. I think I had one more weekend. I went back there, pulled those other trail cameras, checked on that buck one more time, and he just never showed up. You know, I don't know what the deal was. He could have been right there. In fact, he probably was, but I know that you know, he was not one of those highly visible bucks that's, you know, on the same hillside every day. And so now it's the end of September. No archery buck. No happy ending to that. And my next chance is the rifle season for the buck that I've been hunting in the early archery. So I got up there on the 8th. It opens on the 10th. I got up there on the 8th. And if everybody remembers, we got a pretty big storm that first part of October.
Right.
And it started storming the day I went in. In fact, when I got to camp, we had about 3 inches of snow. I had to scrape it back and set the tent up and everything. And it was just me and two horses. Took the Seek outside, 8-man and the XL stove, so that I had, you know, good camp and, you know, hunt the duration. Had to be back to Idaho Falls on like the 18th. So I had a pretty good chunk of time. And it opened on I got to scout on the 9th, but just as I got to the top, same place where I could glass down in that basin, it fogged in. It literally fogged in as I got there.
Oh, man.
And so I sat up there for half a day. I never could see anything. I went around a different way in the afternoon to see if I could see down in there. Of course, I didn't want to walk down in there. I mean, you know, you don't, the fog can help you get close to deer if you know where they're at, but the worst thing you can do is just go tromping through it if you don't know where they're at. So I left them alone, didn't really get to scout that day. The 10th was even worse. We did have a little bit of clearing entering in the morning. But I never saw him or any of those other bucks. And, you know, we're getting into October now. You're not even sure if they're going to be in the alpine country. You know, sometimes they'll move off those big open slopes. Gosh, I think I hunted two more days between a few, fog banks that would roll in and out, I did end up spotting a couple bucks down in that basin. So I knew, okay, there's still deer here. And one of them was a deer I had not seen yet. That was like a 26, 27 inch buck, kind of a last day, you know, nice looking buck. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, he's here. He was with a couple other, 4 points. And I thought, that big buck is probably right here somewhere. And the good thing about that storm, I didn't see any other hunters. And, there's usually some competition. There's usually some other guys there. You know, some other guys that hunt up there that are pretty dang good hunters. In fact, it's kind of disheartening when you see them because they know exactly how to hunt it. I didn't see anybody. And sometimes that's the good thing about those storms is it just people chicken out, especially going that far back in. So
how much snow is on the ground?
Oh, I was getting reinforcing snow every day. And so when I got there on the 8th, I think by about the 11th, I was probably up to 8 inches of snow, quite a bit, but not too much for the deer, but just no visibility to glass. And because I had seen those bucks down in there, I mean, if I get desperate, I'll go pussyfoot around in the fog once I know where they are. But since I didn't know if the buck I was after was down in there, I just thought, well, just bide your time. You've got plenty of time here. And some of the days I didn't even hunt all day. I would hunt till like 3 or 4. And then, you got to feed the horses. You can't just, there's no way to pack enough feed back in there to keep a horse going, two horses going for, that many days. So I would just come back, 3, 4 o'clock, get the horse out on the hobble. Takes about 3 hours to feed a horse. So, I got 6 hours a day that I got to feed them. You can't just let your horse starve. You need them too bad and it's not nice. So, that was kind of my routine some guys do. They'll just like, poor bastards. I don't care. I feed them hay all winter. They're going to suffer for a couple of days. I'm just not one of those guys that can do that to a horse. And so I thought, I'm just going to bide my time. This storm is going to break. And when it breaks, I'm going to see deer, because nobody's down in there messing with them. So on Friday, which would have been the 12th. So I'd been there, 5 days now. And, we got a windstorm during the night and knocked the tent down kind of windstorm and was shaking all night. I mean, I was thinking, man, this is bad, but it had quit snowing and I got up about 4:45 and threw the tent door open. Man, we had stars, first stars I'd seen in 5 days. And I thought, well, the wind's blowing like crazy. The deer definitely not going to be up on top, but this is the first day I can really see. I better get out there. So, got back up on that ridge where I wanted to look at those deer. And, that's where I was headed. And, but you got to hunt across some finger ridges to get up there. And I thought, with this storm moving all the deer around, they're not going to be right on top because of the wind. They hate the wind. You guys have seen that the last couple of days. I'm going to hunt these little finger ridges. And then by 9, 10 o'clock, I'll be right up on top where I can look down into where I was hunting them during archery season. So I can cover the whole thing. So it's cold. It's probably 20 degrees, which isn't super cold, but you throw a 20 mile an hour wind on that. I'm sure it was in the single digits. So cold that if you took your glove off, your hand would just freeze almost instantly. So I'm working my way across that slope, trying to go just as slow as I can because there's so much country and it's pretty open, big patches of timber, but you walk between two patches of timber and you're just exposed. And I just learned the hard way. You just go get on a mission to get to your glassing point, you end up spooking more deer than you'll ever see from your glassing point. And so I don't want to call it still hunting because I didn't know where the bucks were. I think of still hunting of, when you know where a buck is or where they've been and you kind of pussyfoot through there. So it was just really just kind of moving through the deer country, being careful. And not long after sunrise, I spotted about a 170 buck laying down on a little point that was about 200 yards below me. And I just looking at him, I could tell that is a mature deer. That's like a 4-year-old or better deer. He had good mass, probably 5-inch bases, carried it well. He was only about 25 inches wide. I didn't want to shoot him, but I thought that is so weird, early October and he's out here by himself. That just doesn't make sense. So I was really careful to glass everything around him to see. And the reason he was laying down, because it was so windy. He was trying to stay out of the wind too. Even though he was on a little point, he was down kind of a draw. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you could just tell looking at the grass around him, it wasn't even moving. He had found him a little place. And I thought, man, there's probably another buck there. But I couldn't just sit there all morning because I really wanted to get up and look in that basin with the, you know, first day of visibility. So I just took as much time as I could to get around him without spooking him. He was kind of facing away, but I had to cross a really open slope, so I had to be really careful. So, you know, we're literally moving at the pace of like what you would stalk a deer at. But I finally got around him, and in that time I had been able to glass all the little nooks and crannies around him, and he literally was alone. I could not see another deer down there. But off to his south, there was a slope that had deer tracks on it that was probably 100 yards from him. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, those are either his tracks or there's other deer over that slope. So as I work my way around there, you know, I'm working my way south. As I get around there, now I can see onto that slope, and it's a timbered ridge. It's kind of got an old burn on it. Not a big burn. We're talking like lightning strike type of burn, you know, burned up a little bit of timber down there. I got around to that side of the ridge, and I'm getting cold from moving so slow. You know, like I need to speed up, but I need to really glass that ridge. And I got over there and sat down in the snow and started glassing, bam, two bucks feeding 500 yards away. And I could tell I was using my Swirl 8s. I could tell one of them had a really good frame on them. And like a new buck that I'd never seen.
Is that like Christmas?
It's like Christmas. In fact, I remember saying to myself, kick ass. Because, you know, I've been basically tent bound for 5 days and, you know, and just not seeing much. And I thought that buck looks good. But the wind was blowing so hard that I could not get the spotter on him on a tripod. So I slid on my butt, and the mountain's steep, like 40 degree slope. And I'm out, you know, 6 inches of vegetation. I'm totally exposed. So I couldn't stand up and walk. So I just slid down the mountain on my butt. I only had to go about 50 yards, and I came to a little crest on the hill where I could kind of get behind it and be below the spotting scope and lay the spotting scope on my pack. Mm-hmm. And so then when I got the spotter on him, it wasn't even the kind of buck you need to put a spotter on. He was good, you know, almost 30 inch frame, two big twin cheaters on him. Took like 1 second to decide to shoot him. And he's feeding away from me down the slope. And like I said, now he's about 450 yards. In fact, I remember ranging him. I was getting like 453, 455. But the wind's blowing so hard that I'm not so much worried about wind drift, but I'm shooting that ultralight Christensen, you know, 7 pounds. Mm-hmm. When a gun's that light, the wind affects the gun.
Yeah.
You know, the gun will wiggle.
Absolutely.
You know what? Yeah. I could look through the scope and tell, like, I can probably hit him, but I think I can do better than this. And so I thought, they were feeding back towards that other buck. So the way I had just came, so I kind of knew what was over on that other slope. It was a slope where I'd seen those tracks. In fact, it turned out it was those bucks' tracks. And I think those bucks had all been together at one point. And they had just fed over the ridge. And I thought, okay, he's going to feed back towards that other buck. I'm going to get back over here on the backside of this ridge, and I'm going to cut off about 300 yards. So I dropped off the mountain. And gosh, as soon as I dropped 200 yards, it was like a whole new climate. Just getting off of that big windy slope. But now I'm low enough on the mountain, I can't see the deer anymore. I'm looking down through the tops of the timber and, you know, just kind of a line of sight of where they were. And by the way, that other buck he was with was just like a small 4-point, you know, 140 4-point. And I got down there and I could see a big notch in the timber. When I say a notch, like a 20-yard opening, it almost looked like a saddle. And I glassed it real hard and I saw that little 4-point walk through that saddle, kind of feed through it. I could just see the top of his antlers. And I thought, well, that big buck's probably not going to leave him. They were the only two deer that I saw out there. And I was probably about 200 yards from that opening by then. But as I got looking at it, there was a lot of brush in it. And where the 4-point had come through, I really could only see his head and his antlers. And I thought, you know what? They're too far below the crest of the hill that I've got to get even closer. And now I'm kind of questioning my decision of like, oh man, I'm actually losing visibility the closer I get to them. And a lot of times that's why big bucks are hard to see, because you either got to shoot them from a long ways away where you can see everything, or you got to get in their living room and kill them. It's hard to find them in that in between. You're nodding your head, Ryan. You know what I'm talking about. And I thought, well, I can't go back up the slope now, and they're far enough under the hill now. I'm not going to be able to see them from up there. I'm committed. I got to get in there. So I got in stealth mode and just started working working my way down there. And what usually ends up goofing you up, and you heard me talk about this earlier in the story, is you're looking at your feet because you're trying not to step on things, and then you go too fast and they see you. So I was really trying to be careful, you know, move fast enough to make some time and yet not make any noise. And the lower I got on the hill, the harder it got to see, and it was to see in that opening. And I'm like, oh, man, this
were,
is.
Were you second guessing yourself? At
I
that
was.
Point?
I was, but it was too late. I mean, I was committed. I had to get in their living room, and it had probably been about 10 minutes since that little 4-point had walked through.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm thinking if that big buck is 20 yards down the hill from him, he could walk right by and I wouldn't see him. So I went as fast as I could, and I ended up at about 130 yards from that opening. And I sat down and I started glassing, and I figured this is probably as well as I'm going to be able to see in there. And I started glassing and I spotted that little 4-point, and he had turned and actually started feeding up towards me. And this is not a wide open slope. I don't want to make it sound like it's heavy timber, but you know, it was, he was mostly obscured, put it that way. Mm-hmm. When I first saw him, it was just a deer body and I could see an antler, and I thought, okay, that's not a big deer. That's got to be that 4-point. And I watched him for a couple of minutes, and you know, deer will tell you where the other deer are if you watch them long enough. And I just kept my binos on him. I had a walking stick, by the way, because it was so steep. This is going to come into play in just a second. So I put that walking stick up against my knee, and it was so steep I could prop that stick against my knee and lay the binoculars on my knee. And I had my rifle right there. So I just stared at him, and I thought, man, he's going to tell me if that other buck is there. And sure enough, every minute or so, he'd see him turn and look straight to the south. And I just thought, okay, he's watching another deer. He's making sure that other deer's there. I thought, I better get ready. So I got my rifle ready, kept that shooting stick up against my left knee, and I'm solid, you know, just like shooting off of a tripod. And, you know, I can kill this 4-point like 25 times. You know, he's 110, 120 yards. But I never can see that other deer. And it's thick enough. This is how thick it is, that if I took my eyes off the 4-point to kind of, now I'm just glassing through my scope on my rifle.
Mm-hmm.
10 power light hunter vortex, just looking through that. And then I would come back to the 4-point, and it would take me a second to find him because he would take a step and he'd be obscured under some spruce branches or something. I mean, this is nerve wracking when you're this close to deer and you can't shoot. And, I finally saw another deer, but it was thick enough. I thought, okay, did the 4-point move, or has that other buck fed into where I can see him, into my field of view? And I couldn't tell. I could never see two deer at once. I could just see one deer, but it seemed to be changing positions. And I don't know, it probably was not as long as I'm making it sound in the story, but I'll bet at least five minutes went by,
mm-hmm.
possibly 10, of trying to decide, am I
in
looking
your
at
scope.
All of
That's
it in my scope.
That's a long time to be
all
in your
of
scope.
It in my scope, yeah. And no way to move. There's just no, you can't get up and move to the left or move to the right or stand up. I mean, they're close enough that they're going to hear you. And I finally got two deer in my scope. And I thought, okay, I could see like the rump of one, and then, you know, it was far enough away that this is either a 20 foot long deer or there's two deer there. And and I finally made out the 4-point's antler. And I thought, okay, there's the 4-point. This other one's got to be that big buck. So I pulled over onto him. Of course, you know, you don't dare shoot because there can be other deer too. You know, even though maybe there's another buck with them. And so, you know, I'm making this probably way too long, but this is just going back and forth of, okay, is that him? I'm just going to stay on him, but I don't want to get too much tunnel vision because this other one, you know, could be there and he could just appear. And you know, it's thick enough that you're never going to see the entire deer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking at that deer, and then finally I see this him turn his head, and I see a big cheater, like a 3-inch cheater, up high on his G2. I thought, okay, that's him. And when he turned, all I could see was his antler sticking out from behind a spruce and the crease behind his front shoulder. I couldn't even see his front shoulder, but I could see just enough.
Oh, so, exactly how many yards?
About 120. And
that's awesome.
At one point, too, I had scooted across the ground just a little bit to try to reposition myself, and that 4-point had looked up my way. But, you know, he didn't spook, But this buck had keyed in on that too and was actually looking at me, towards me, like, because that's what they do. Like, they'll know something's up there and they'll feed, but they'll keep their attention towards it. And I could tell when he turned, that's what he was doing, is he was looking back up there. And I wasn't looking at the 4-point anymore, but I think he was staring at me too. So anyways, I dropped that dot on that G4 behind the front shoulder. I knew unless something was wrong with the gun, he was dead. But it was thick enough. I never saw him jump. I never saw him turn. I never saw anything. And probably about 10 seconds went by after I shot. And then I saw that little 4-point turn and walk down the hill. And he didn't even act that spooked.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, totally clean miss, and they just walked off the hill, or that big buck just dropped and he's laying right there. Didn't give him as long as I usually do. You know me, I'm pretty careful about walking up on them because you can lose them. But I thought, nah, that was too perfect of the sight picture. I mean, that was right on his heart.
That was either dead or miss.
Yep, dead or miss. So I went down there, sorted out their tracks, and found two sets of deer tracks. Couldn't walk to right where I shot. It was still too thick. I could not just say, okay, he was right there. So I had to find their tracks. Found big spray of blood on the snow and hair. And I thought, okay, that's awesome. I hit him. I still had to track him 50 yards before I found him.
He really and bounded 50 yards.
He did. He made it 50 yards. And when I hit him, I actually hit him. He must have been getting ready to take a step because I hit him in the elbow. Just slightly in the elbow, and that burger opened up pretty big before it. I mean, it looked like a softball went through him. But it had hit him right where I'd aimed, maybe just a hair lower than where I'd aimed. But yeah, he still made it 50 yards. So he was stuck in a big ceanothus bush, all twisted up in there and everything. And I could just tell he had good antlers. But man, as I started rolling him out of that bush, this is one of those bucks that actually got bigger. Nice. So I figured he was probably about 30. And I got looking at him, and oh man, he was awesome. He was like, I can't remember, an 8x9 or a 7x8, one of the two, a couple extra cheaters up high, mostly typical, but good heavy buck, carried it all the way to the top. I was thrilled. I mean, it was a shock to find him, and especially to not have seen that buck before for all that time I had spent up there. And so I ended up killing him on the finger ridges on the backside of that basin. I never actually did make it up to the basin when we finally had glassing, visual where we could glass. So I don't know if that other buck was in there or not, but most of the time, especially in country that doesn't have a lot of big bucks, when you're hunting one big buck, you don't see others big bucks. You'll see all the little, juveniles running around and everything. So it's one of the few times I've actually found a different big buck. And keep in mind, I had been up there now between archery and scouting and then that rifle hunt, and even though I hadn't been right in that exact spot, I mean, I had 14, 15 days in that area and I had never seen that buck. I don't think he migrated in. I don't think anything more than it's just, you just don't see them all. Is what it gets down to. And so I was reminded that, always hunt careful, even if you're not right in the core area of where you've been seeing the bucks. And, I've seen bucks on those finger ridges before. That's why I was hunting through there carefully. But, it's not the kind of place, it's like a buck honey hole, that they're always there. But I'm glad I didn't just go stomping through it, because I would either spooked him or I just wouldn't have seen him.
And this is all OTC public land, right?
Yeah, that was OTC. So I let that controlled hunt go to, on the low country buck and to go hunt this one. And now I'm glad I did.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing buck. I mean, for most people, that would be a buck of a lifetime, but not for the legend.
Not for the legend. Sad. No, man, I couldn't hardly sleep in his basement the other day with all them bucks staring over me.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot in his garage. There's dream bucks that don't get to get in the house.
Yeah, they're not big enough.
Yeah, this one's definitely a basement buck.
He's going in the basement.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the taxidermist called me the other day, and I had him euroed, but I was getting his hide tan too, so I could get him mounted later on. And he said, "Dude, you ruined the cape. You cut his lip off on the side." And I remember as I was caping him, I killed him on a nasty slope, 40 degree slope. It was tough and I was tired. I mean, I barely got him out by dark. And, I remember when I was caping him, kind of getting in a hurry on that side. And I'm like, okay, am I cutting in the right spot? And I finally decided I did, but he said I ruined the cape. So might be a while before I can mount this one.
Mm.
Unless Justin gives me a cape from his buck this week.
That's what we can find. We got a couple more days.
Yeah, there you go. So anyways, I was reminded that, you know, just go after your best chance. It was really tempting to stay after that low country buck. That low country buck probably would outscore this buck, but, you know, it just wasn't panning out, and I'm glad I didn't go. I'm glad I didn't go after him, because the season was the same. Everything opens October 10th. Even the controlled hunts open October 10th, you know, so you have to pick which one you want to go after.
Is that the controlled hunt? Is it hard to draw or is it pretty?
Easy. No. Piece of cake.
So how 14 miles in?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How far did you have to pack him to get to the horses?
I was able to get the horses right down to him, but it was nasty. You couldn't ride them. You had to lead them, and little bit dicey getting them out of there. Like, you know, the horses, you know, we had all that snow, but that day it had cleared off. So that was the first snow, and we had such a dry fall that the ground was warm. So it was really muddy, you know, going clear up to the horses' hocks. And, so I had to lead them out of there, and I, you know, got him out right at dark.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
On a kind of another note, but same kind of topic, if you take us through your couple of pieces you're trying out for 19 on the first site, we did it the other night, but just like one or two pieces that are the highlight that you really appreciate.
Oh, gotcha. This, I had this on when I killed him. This, what they're calling the first light sweater, although Ryan has already petitioned Kenton to change the name, and I agree, because it's far from a sweater.
Yeah, I don't know how you call it a sweater, guys.
Yeah, it's like a light puffy, but it's a down jacket. I've got it out here for the guys that are on Instagram. I really like it. It's we weighed it. It's 13.3 ounces. It's not as warm as my puffy, simply because it doesn't have a cinch at the bottom, so it's a little more airier. You know, it gets a little more air up and down it. But it's great for hiking, great for active hunting. Mm-hmm. I wore the heck out of it, and so that's a pre-production coat. It's not out yet. Hope they change the name and add a cinch to it and release it. I think it'll be a good seller. First Light's released three new gloves. One's a big soft shell glove. I used it for when I was riding the horses and stuff. It's probably a little heavy for active hunting. And then they have a lighter glove. It's the bigger glove has what'd you say that lining was, Ryan? It's got fleece like the grizzly.
Yeah, like the grizzly.
The grizzly was the one fingered glove that they had, and then the three fingers. Yeah. So if any of you saw that,
penguin hand.
Yeah. What was it?
It's like the penguin's hand.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. And so it's got that kind of insulation, good warm glove. But then their lighter glove is a micro fleece glove. It's like Callahan was telling me they've designed it to be like a work glove. It's leather palmed. It's pretty heavy duty. I ended up being up there 6 days, you know, cutting all my wood with a hatchet, Wyoming saw, breaking branches off. You know how hard that is on gloves. Never poked any holes in them. Justin, you've seen me wear them on this
every day.
Yeah, I've got about 10 days on them now. What I like about them is the big soft shell ones are too big to put in your pockets. Mm-hmm. You know, they're that thick of a glove. Where these are thin enough, I can put them in my pocket. So like wearing these First Light Obsidians, my hands get cold, like I'm able to get them in the front pockets. And you know, you can overdo it on gloves. I mean, if you're active hunting and wearing a real warm glove, Tan, you won't believe this, but you know, you end up with sweaty hands. Yeah, well, then you end up with cold gloves. It's no different than getting your boots wet.
Right. Yeah.
So I like to be able to put my hand in my pocket without taking my gloves off. So I really like those. And then First Light's releasing a glassing mitten. Tanya's adopted mine up here, and they're kind of funky looking. They are, I don't even know how to describe them. They look like the Michelin Tire Man all stretched out.
Yeah, they look like a cross between a space glove and a condom.
There you go. But if anybody wants to see them, there's a review on Rock Slide. It's actually in our forums. It's in the clothing forum. It's called Big Box of First Light.
Yes.
I put that glove in there. The other gloves I talked about, this sweater, but the glassing mitten works. It's a down glove. It's pretty light duty. I mean, it's nothing. Right. I mean, you could probably wear a hole through them if you started working with them, but they're pretty warm. They're as warm as the big soft shell.
I was going to say, I think they're as warm. I think they're going to be very warm. Tanya has a very low tolerance for cold. So
Tanya got a little cold in them. They work fine with her with the hot hands, but you know, Tanya is self-admittedly a cold person.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
in
more ways than one. Exactly. So, that's not totally true. She made all her dinners up here.
Yeah.
So,
Watch for those on that thread. They're a good option. What I liked about them is they pack down small. Yeah. You know, you can and they don't hardly weigh anything because they're down. And no, I don't know if they're a synthetic light. Down. I don't know what they are, but you know, like I said, I don't think you want to do a lot in them other than glass. And I used them for riding horses, and I actually tested them against the big soft shell, mm-hmm. the soft shell on one hand, the mitten on the other, the mitten one.
They're a mitten. You can't do a lot in a mitten anyways.
Right.
I mean, you can glass, you can look around, kind of do some general things, but they're for keeping your hands cold while you're looking for animals.
Keeping your hands warm. Yeah.
Warm, yeah.
And what I meant is I don't think you'd even want to light.
For Tanya, that's keeping your hands cold.
I don't even think you'd want to go out and gather up firewood in them. I mean, they're pretty delicate little things.
They're puffy pants, but for your hands.
There you go. Yeah,
they're lightweight, so you don't pack a lot of weight.
Someone wanted to know if those pants that you're wearing were 2019s.
These are the Obsidians. These replace the Canabs, Canab 2.0, and I've probably got 12 days on these. I mean, I wore them on that buck hunt, and I haven't torn any holes in them. They seem more durable than the Canabs.
Jody Denning's on. She said she can't hear you, Ryan, so either you need to move your mic further away from your face, or you need to do something.
I'll try to be louder. I live in a very crappy place. For gear,
brush,
timber, mm-hmm. a lot of deadfalls. I got shwee little legs, so I rip shit off on stubs. My Obsidian pants have one hole in probably 60 good days of use. I don't know where they're coming. I know they're not lying, but I mean, what are they doing to those pants? I understand the fit is different for each person, but the ripping, I still haven't figured that out.
Yeah, I was surprised that I've gone this long and no holes. And I have not been wearing gaiters on this hunt. And that's typically when you start tearing them up is in the bottoms. I know I would have torn the Canabs by now. So they're definitely an improvement over the Canabs. And like Ryan said, I'm not doubting the guys said they got holes in them, but maybe there's, 5,000 pair of these out there and we're hearing from the three guys that got holes in them. Well, I don't know.
Guys
but I like them.
And guys that... Or guys or gals that like their stuff generally don't say anything. It's the guys that have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Pipe it up. They're loose, a looser fit. They have more drape to them than the Canabs, but they've got the two cargo pockets. They've got this front pocket on the left side. I've never figured out what it's for. But they're basically just a light wool pant. So if you grew up wearing the heavy wool army pants to stay warm, I think you could switch to these. They're a lot more comfortable, very breathable. And they're not too bad in the wind, though. They're breathable, but it doesn't just blow right through you. This morning and all that wind we were hunting in, my legs never got cold. I've been wearing them with their base layer. Let's see, the top is the fuse, the bottom is the furnace. Is that what they're calling their base layer on the bottom?
Kiln? Is it kiln? The furnace are the really thick ones. Is that them?
No, these are the medium weight. So what?
I don't know what those. Whatever they are, the kiln. I'm not for sure.
I can't remember either.
Bruce
sorry,
still
first
can't
light.
Hear you, Ryan. You need to move your mic further from your face.
Son of a!
Is it just Jody?
No, other people are complaining.
All right, I was gonna say, honey, come on, you can't hear me.
No, she said she can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, all right.
Any other questions, dear?
Well, they were on the last one, so I don't. There was a question about wanted to know about your units, so you could clear some of that up about. They wanted to know if you hunted mule deer, I believe, in southern Arizona.
I never have hunted mule deer in southern Arizona. I've hunted all the northern tier states, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Colorado, Nevada, Utah. That's the only ones
I've hunted. But he's not going to give you units, so don't ask. Quit DMing him. Quit emailing him. Go figure it out. You can do it.
But yeah, no, I have not hunted down there. I like talking about the how with people. No, I don't enjoy talking about the where.
Into an area blind and the time you take off from work.
Well,
that's a loaded question sent from Daniel.
Daniel, this is what I would say. You got to start sometime. We all go into an area blind. Even the areas I know very well, I started with, just a tip or two from somebody or just picked a spot on the map. Look at it as an investment and give yourself a couple years before you make a final decision on them. That place that I hunted this year, I've hunted it multiple times. I've never killed a buck there. At any time I could have just said, oh, that's not worth it there. But, it takes a while to learn these places. And sometimes I think people give up a little too fast on places. And, look how many years you've hunted here, Ryan. What, four? Mm-hmm. You're still learning places where deer are and where to look for
today
them.
Today when we hiked up in the particular spot that we were hunting. And it's amazing when you walk it, how many little folds you miss deer in.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
And good just point. Like that area this year, that low country buck, I mean, that area typically has two or three shooters in it. And I barely found one this year, and he disappeared. So if I only went there one year, I couldn't make an accurate assessment on it because other years it has more big bucks in it. So that's what I would say. Start somewhere, really do a good job scouting. You know, go there before the season when you can really take a look at what's around without other people goofing you up. Because otherwise you're just going to always think the grass is greener somewhere else. And I find that, you know, all the hot spots in the West are basically gone. You just got to get out there and learn some country. You know, everybody's hunting somewhere. There's nowhere I hunt that there's not other people. That story I told you this time, yeah, I didn't see anybody there this year, but I think that had a lot to do with the weather.
Right.
I really do. And so you just get out there and learn it. That's a lot of the fun of it right there.
So you're telling them to find an over-the-counter unit and stick with it and check.
Yeah,
it out.
If he's talking over-the-counter, I mean, I just said it. I apply for draw hunts. I mean, I applied in five or six states this year. I always do that, but those opportunities are getting less and less and less. And you know, you're gonna often be hunting very easy to draw or over-the-counter units. And they're just, when I say there's no hot spots left, that's what I mean. They're not. None of them are fantastic. If they are, the word gets out so quickly now, the next year they suck and they're covered with people. You're better to just find places that really aren't that great, but still have the potential to grow older deer if we're talking about big buck hunting. And there's still millions of acres across the West that are like that.
All right. So Quack says, Sam from Daniel says, thanks guys. Much appreciated. Quack says, what if you're old and you don't have time to waste? Well, welcome to everybody's world.
Don't have time to waste. Is scouting wasting your time and hunting?
Yeah. We're all old. All of us anyway.
I don't know what waste. If I'm hunting, I'm not wasting time.
I'm glad you guys said that because that's what I would say too is change your attitude. There's never, that's why I told Daniel, think of it as an investment. I mean, unless you are so old that this is your last year of hunting, you can always be investing in improving your odds. Some of the best hunters I know around this area are in their 60s and 70s, and yeah, they can't tear up the mountains, but they're very methodical in what they do. They know their areas very well. They pace themselves, and they do very well. So no, I would just look at it as, you know, if you think it's a waste to go learn about your areas and everything, then
I think he probably means, and correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe he just means that you don't have a lot of extra time, you know, like you just really have to get down to it because your time is very, maybe like a long weekend or something.
Gotcha.
Is maybe how he's meaning that.
Open your wallet is what I would say. Go get with a good outfitter. Get with a good operation that has a place you can hunt that matches physically what you can do. And, you know,
good advice.
If that's what he means, that's what I would say is then sometimes you got to spend a little bit more. Yeah.
And that's a really good point. And I think that's true in life. Either you have a lot of time that you can do something or you can have, well, if I talk loud, then they can't hear me or vice versa. Or you have the money to spend and you can have somebody do it for you. I mean,
yeah, right.
That's like home improvement projects, fixing your car. I mean, like that's literally everything in life.
Absolutely.
I think.
Yeah. Either you do it yourself or you pay someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And there's no shame in paying someone. That's what I'm saying is, there's some good research services out there and, I would get with them, Go Hunt, Epic Hunt, you know, places like that can really help people out that if they're on a time crunch and they just can't get out there, but, hopefully we answered it with what he was asking.
And one more thing on that is
comeback.
honey's not a waste. It's proven over and over again that you can go blind on rock slide. Mm-hmm. People post all the time. I did a little research. This is my first time doing blank and they have success. It may not be a 200-inch deer or a 350-inch bull, but they have success on good animals.
Yep.
Well, that's where you have to just appreciate each animal you take. Yep. And you talked about this on one of our podcasts, Robbie, with us, is if you are dissatisfied with the animal you take, then you shouldn't be shooting it, because it's wrong for you to take that animal's life and then not respect that.
Yep, exactly. It's nobody's fault but ourselves. And, you know, that story I was telling today, I was like so careful not to shoot the wrong buck. But if I had pasted that little 4-point, yeah, that would have hurt. But you know what? That's not that deer's fault. I shot it. I made the mistake, and I'm going to...
I shot the wrong elk this year.
Yeah, Ryan knows. It happens.
I'll have a podcast later. I shot the wrong elk, and there was other problems with it, and I'll have a podcast on it.
Yep. But you don't appreciate the animal any less because of that. I mean,
absolutely. You guys went to great efforts to find that elk.
We went to great efforts to find it. I knew it. Long story short, I lost an animal, and we found it 6 days later, and it was... It hurts your gut. I don't know if you're a hunter and your gut hurts
it
for like
does.
Days.
It's the worst to wound an animal. Just
for sure.
I'll do a podcast on it, but I shot the wrong elk, and I still respect that elk just as much as any other elk I've ever shot.
Yeah.
All right. Somebody else wanted to know, I'm trying to find the question, but basically, are you going to do an audio version of your book? Because they don't have time to read. And you know, before you say anything, I totally agree with that, because I listen to audiobooks or podcasts almost every single night. And it's actually, I really like it. And people can listen to them in their car. It keeps saying pause because you weren't using the app. And I have no idea what that means. But anyway, are you?
You don't have to talk me into it. I've already been thinking about it. All it is right now is time and connections. I don't know how to do an audiobook yet, and I've been kind of researching here the last couple of months, and I'm a little short on time.
Do you want me to read it out loud for you? Do you want me to just read your book out loud, like story time?
No, and then once...
Just do a chapter at a time, let Tanya do it.
There you go. Well, then it would be like a bedtime story, because Tanya's got like this calming voice.
Yeah, I do. That's what everybody says. It's so calming.
But to answer your question, I would like to, and I am looking into it. But I really don't know much about that side of the publishing industry. It's probably not that hard. That's why I said it has to do with time. But I really would like to, and I'm hoping you're my first customer if I do it.
Awesome. Okay, so...
Kendall Card at Black Ovis has been asking me the same thing. It's like, dude, I don't read.
Audiobook?
Yeah, give me an audiobook.
I read list of audio, then read them.
Yeah, I would too, because that's... That time of night, like I pick it out. I mean, then I can actually listen to it uninterrupted.
Yeah.
Well, sure. And truthfully, if we had Justin read it, it'd be done in half the time.
There you go.
I wouldn't understand half of it, but okay.
But hey, but thanks to the thousands of people that did take time to read the book.
If I read it, you couldn't understand my mumbling.
He said, Robbie, I'm a fireman with three kids. Help me out, buddy. Yeah, we get it. No, I mean.
It's called circumcision. I'm not circumcision. It's called getting fixed. No more kids.
Hey,
more
what money. I would tell him is just what having. We said before is start investing in your hunting future. And don't tag it as successful whether you got a deer that year or not. You guys got one time I went 3 years straight without shooting a deer in my 20s.
What are you
and
talking
I was,
about?
The guy that said I'm a fireman. I got three.
No,
kids.
He was talking about didn't have time to read.
Oh.
Oh, okay. So what I thought he was talking
about. I'm talking about circumcision.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
We screwed that one up bad.
Gosh. Okay, let's see.
He said I have my appointments already. Hopefully not for circumcision. Because that shit would hurt.
Oh, my God. Ryan has crown in that cup. If anybody at all is wondering, which I doubt they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
He just topped it off, too.
That's hilarious. You have your appointment already. And it's not as bad as everybody makes it out. So don't let any of your friends scare you.
I only died once. And I thought they were pulling out my heart.
They probably did.
Oh, gosh.
But that's another story. I don't know what is wrong with your phone, but it is freaking out.
It's working on here.
No, it keeps saying pause. Right,
but it's not on here. Okay, it's working. Good. I can see Ryan picking his nose.
I'll read it in skills for... I'll read it in trade for skills training. That's funny. That's probably a work-related thing that you have
I would
to do.
Like to read my book on an audio. That's really not the problem. But the time part I meant was researching it and figuring out how to do it.
Just do Audible.
When I first wrote my book and they sent me the proof, I think I read the whole thing in one night because I had to. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
No, it's not. And depending, and you can speed it up the volume or the pace of the book.
Can you? So
or
it's like
slow
a podcast?
It down. Yeah. So, I mean, like some people just process things faster, so you can speed it up or slow it down, whatever. So it's kind of nice. Okay, Robbie, I Fuck, I didn't. Oh, excuse my language. I took my glasses off. I can't read
it. Hey, he says, hey, Robbie, who's your best looking friend? That would be Ryan Pimentel, the ultimate predator. 123. Dude, how, did I solve that one? That was so easy.
Well, yeah, why don't you read the questions then if you guys can see
Well, you know what?
Them.
I guess I can see them. That's Seth. My girlfriend Leia is obsessed with the coyotes, dogs, and badger vids. LOL. Not sure what that means, but we read it.
Is it Princess Leia?
No, it's sent from Daniel.
What coyote, dog, and badger videos? What do you mean sent from Daniel? What are you talking about?
Hey, Ultimate Predator, why are you not out hunting? I happen to know that you've got like a once-in-a-lifetime tag in your pocket.
You
are home on Instagram right now.
Well, it is
messing
dark.
Messing with me.
It is dark. He probably can't shoot anything right now,
he
right?
He could
That's
be scouting.
Illegal.
He could be driving logging roads and looking for tracks. Come on. Then your name is Ultimate Predator.
What does that mean about us? Should we be out scouting?
No,
right
we're
now?
Doing podcasts. Exactly. Like, we got all this room to talk. We have no deer either. So.
He's like, yeah, what are you guys doing right now? Okay. I think we answered them all. Does anybody else?
I think we did. Is that all of them?
Is that Jody says, Ryan, you're hilarious.
Oh, damn.
Jody, come on. I thought you're my
Jody,
friend.
You're a
Why
good
are
woman.
You egging him on?
And she makes good chicken, too.
Does she? I wouldn't know. Man,
peanut, she did ask what was for dinner
her
tonight.
Her peanut chicken was delicious.
Hey, I'm looking at this this live video on the Instagram. Mm-hmm. I have moobs. I'm not liking that.
Let's zoom in on them.
Tanya, do you have a
And
a
she had a crotch shot on
I
you.
Can borrow?
Yeah,
and she
I
was crotch shotting you.
I have a couple.
Hey,
they probably
thanks
fit.
For sending Stealth Cam battery pack a while ago. Hey, this is my friend. I think he's in New York. And he got it working great. Good job, dude. That's why I gave it away, because I knew there was somebody out there that had more time than me that could fix that thing. What he's talking about is my a review I did for Stealth Cam last year. They sent me the external battery pack. And I've done several reviews on external battery packs. They work. They work awesome. But beavers, badgers, weasels, moose... tear them up. They rip the wires out, and that's what he's talking about. I sent him one, and he fixed it, and he's got it working. So there's a review for you. If you use any external battery pack, the wires are going to get chewed, and you're going to lose power. It's happened to me many times.
Are you talking about on trail cameras?
Trail cameras. Yeah. Okay. So what the trail camera companies need to do is a Bluetooth connection between the battery and the trail camera, if that's even possible. Mm. I don't know, but the wires always do break.
Those angry beavers.
Watch
out for the angry beavers.
Hey, glad you chimed in, Sam. Thanks.
You have a friend. That's.
I have a couple friends, too.
See,
but
I told you
I
it wasn't nice,
them,
Jody.
I have to give them things to be my friend.
But you married a lovely woman.
And sometimes trail cameras get stolen. You're right, Jody. We talked about that earlier.
Yeah, I lost two.
What'd you say, Ryan?
I said, and you married a lovely woman.
I did. She's right here on the podcast. This is the most attention she's given me in years.
it's the actually, moobs.
This is great.
She's watching the moobs on live.
Yeah, exactly. She heard me talking about my moobs. All right. Honey, we got to do something about this.
Well, what is she going to do? Drive you to the gym? You already worked there.
You ladies know how to like support things and pull things in. And
I already
all
told
that stuff.
You could borrow one of my bras. Okay. It's a Victoria's Secret. It's a good one.
I will. We'll have that on the podcast tomorrow.
Awesome. So, Seth from Daniel says, I read somebody says Idaho Seth is in the room. My bad. I don't know who that is. Idaho Seth. Do you guys know Idaho Seth?
I'm a Star Wars fan, but I don't know what all that stuff is. So
you don't
Idaho Seth.
No, he was talking about Seth, Princess Leia, all that stuff.
I don't know.
Remember?
I don't
Maybe
know
he means Sith.
That's a Sith Lord.
Yeah,
boy,
I don't
we
know.
Have really
I
have no fucked idea. This podcast up.
If my wife leaves me because I'm hunting, I'm sending her to talk to yours, Robbie. Oh, she just take good care of her. She won't leave you. And be
well,
a little bit annoying so that when you do go hunting, she's like, oh, this is a nice break. That's what my
wife
does.
Yeah, there's actually a guy on Rock Slide that would tell you all about that.
Yeah, that's true.
His wife doesn't care if he goes hunting every single day.
But he won't hear this because he's not on social media.
Hey, can I tell the joke about what Jody said the first time I went hunting after we got married?
Please.
I know it's getting old amongst you guys, but I still think it's so funny. So I knew I married a non-hunter. Jody's awesome. She supports hunting, but she truly is a non-hunter. But I knew I married a non-hunter the first time I came home from a hunt. And she said, honey, did you catch... horny head. That was 17 years ago, but it's still so funny. Awesome.
You could take that a lot of ways.
That's not what she meant. It was totally innocent. Did you catch horny head? And I'm like,
did you say it's called that, a soup kitchen?
Oh, let's not even go there. No, look, she's giving me three question marks. You know it's true, honey. You're the one that made up the phrase horny head. You know that. So that's where that came
she
from.
She said, Ryan.
What?
I don't know. Something don't know what, you said.
Yeah, I don't know what
was
she
was. Was it the angry beaver comment?
Probably.
Probably. There's a little bit of a delay
far?
There. Right. Oh. Ryan, did we say on here today he FaceTimed us from the potty?
Yeah.
That's Ryan. That's the greatest thing about hunting with Ryan. There's a lot of laughs.
Okay, so Kern River Skullwork says, to make understand.
Oh, he was talking about I'm going to send my wife to your wife when she gets mad at me for hunting too much.
Right.
So we answered him.
Gotcha. Okay, I wasn't sure.
I think this feed on mine's a little delayed from Ryan's phone.
Maybe. Probably because I'm recording.
Well, I think that's everything. We don't want to bore you
so.
Guys.
Nobody's asked any questions
Thanks
lately.
Thanks for the
so.
Questions, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-oh, here it is. I hunted a very well-known unit east of Idaho Falls for 8 days and only saw one
very
small buck, which I shot, and I wasn't road hunting like every other person here. Badge unit, this was my first year. I don't know if you just tuned in on this, but we just got done talking at the first of the podcast just how tough a shape southeast Idaho is in right now. For buck numbers, they're very low.
If you'd have waited till the ninth day, you'd have got a bigger one.
Yeah, maybe.
What's the unit? We got to know the unit.
No, yeah, that's really. What I was going to ask.
but no, it's just the condition of our buck herd right now. We don't have a lot of bucks right now. There's still a few big ones around because anytime we have a hard winter, the deer herd gets smaller, so the bucks that survive get bigger. That's just how it is.
How many years after that do you start seeing more mature?
About three. I mean. You know, somewhere in there.
Gotcha.
All things being equal, sometimes they don't recover, but they will. But no, dude, I wouldn't say bad unit. It's just tough right now. I know guys that are good hunters that have lived in southeast Idaho for many years that are seeing 10% the number of bucks that they were seeing prior to the 16-17 winter. That winter kicked our butt.
Well, you know, even here you'll see, we've seen probably 20, me and Tanya, 30 does, no bucks.
No bucks. Mm-hmm. We're just down on buck numbers right now.
This is the lowest amount of deer that I've seen. This is my third year hunting this unit.
Yep.
He put so Tex Creek.
Yeah, dude, that's kind of the heart of the winter kill, too. And remember, they burned 50,000 acres of critical winter range on the Tex Creek unit right before the 16-17 winter. Some Yahoo in Ammon, Idaho lit off a firework when we had a red flag warning.
How many acres?
50,000.
Wow.
All this country back east of us right here, it got all burned right before that hard winter. The fishing game fed the elk, but it's hard to feed deer because deer don't congregate like elk do. And that was kind of the death knell for that deer herd. And so, yeah, you're normal. You're not a bad hunter. A lot of guys aren't even finding bucks.
Yep.
Just how it is.
Yeah.
Just how it is.
Like I said, there's like, I think we've seen how many bucks so far? Like
two.
Five? A total?
Yeah, between me and we've only seen two, me and Tanya. We saw a shooter buck. He was a big three, kind of like your Montana three.
Yep.
Big, heavy three. I don't know how wide because I'm bad at guessing that. But I saw him. I thought he was a huge two. I was like, I even said Tanya, I was like, that's a humongous 2-point. And he turned his head and he had fronts with no forks.
Is Robbie human? Yeah, dude, I am.
He's got moves. He's human.
I've got, I was going to say,
you'll see how human he is when he shows off one of my bras tomorrow.
Good
live.
I'll give you the pink one to wear.
Hey, Blake Antis. Yes, you're welcome, man. He's the one I think that only got only found one buck in 8 days.
Buck in 8 days.
Hey, at the beginning of this podcast, I was saying I applied in 5 other states. I just didn't draw. I tried to get out of here again this year because I knew that it's just
so you're saying
tough.
Starting to go into next year and the following, you'll start to see. No, if the winter's nice.
We'll start getting some of our buck numbers back. But for you big buck hunters, remember, there's still some very big bucks on the hill because when, like the 16-17 winter, that kills off all your fawns. From that winter, so, you know, got a gap in the age class coming up the next couple of years, you know, like 5 years from now, you don't have any big bucks. But the bucks that made it through that were like 2 or 3 years old, they made it through because they're genetically better bucks. They're heavier, they're bigger. That's why they survived the winters. You know, it truly is survival of the fittest. And those bucks now don't have much competition with for feed. And a lot of people don't realize this. And this is, and we this is a whole nother podcast, but this is why I'm not against shooting does if biologically you can in the unit, you know, if you got an increasing deer herd, you know, all this other stuff, because does compete with bucks for feed on the winter range.
That's and never brought up either.
I know it's not. It's either you either hate people for shooting does or you shoot does and you don't tell anybody.
Well, I might shoot one tomorrow.
Exactly. So I think that's one of the reasons when the deer herd is low that sometimes you grow some really good bucks. Mm-hmm. I saw this after 92, 93. I saw mega bucks in 95 and 96, and our deer herd was as low as it ever was after 92, 93. And I think the numbers we have right now are approaching that. But then those bucks are that make it through just do better. They grow good antlers and everything. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, be all doom and gloom. I mean, you got to keep hunting, and I'm just saying that there's a few out there. But you're going to have guys like Blake Antis on there saying, hey, man, I just hunted 8 days in and only saw one buck. Yeah, that's just how it is.
Hunting.
Mm-hmm. Yep, just how it is right now. Where a couple of years ago, you could have seen 10 bucks in those 8 days.
Yep.
So. Yep.
You know, the funny thing is, too, you can't always go off of that, because last year when we were here, we saw, in the 3 days of hunting, we saw four points before Tanya shot hers. Yeah. So it's just luck of where, you know, just being out there and being lucky. And
yeah, and we didn't have a hard winter this year. Why are there less bucks right now?
Right.
So you know, it's interesting. I don't know. It's Justin just said it. It's still hunting. It's you know, no matter what.
And they're just as tasty.
Yeah, they're just as tasty. That's right. And but it's just tougher now. It's just tougher now. But it'll heal up. Short of another hard winter, it'll heal back up.
All right. I think we're really out of here now.
All right. Thanks guys. Everybody.
Appreciate it.